This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In the 1973 movie The Paper Chase, John Houseman plays Charles W. Kingsfield, a fierce and brilliant contracts professor at Harvard Law School. He tells his students, "I train your minds. You come in here with a skull full of mush. You leave thinking like a lawyer."
"Loudly, Mr. Hart. Fill this room with your intelligence. Now, will you give us the facts of the case?"
"I haven't read the case."
"Class assignments for the first day are posted on the bulletin boards in Langdell and Austin Halls. You must have known that."
"No."
"You assumed that this first class would be a lecture, an introduction to the course."
"Yes, sir."
"Never assume anything in my classroom."
Yeah, and that's why I became a journalist. Anyway, a lot has changed since the days of Professor Kingsfield. No doubt there are still rigorous and demanding law professors, but today, American legal education is in crisis. At least that's what our next guest argues. He's Vincent Rougeau, the dean of Boston College Law School. Writing recently in The Atlantic, Rougeau says that not long ago, newly minted JDs could count on high-paying jobs at big legal firms. But those days are gone.
According to the American Bar Association, last year only 55% of law school graduates landed full-time jobs that required passing the bar. A growing number of graduates are entering an increasingly uncertain job market, burdened with as much as $150,000 in debt, which does raise the question, does it even make sense to go to law school?
Vincent Rougeau says the answer is yes, but he says law schools must change the way they operate, and he has a set of specific proposals to fix law schools. First and foremost, they need to turn away prospective students who are in it just for the money. And he says law schools need to get back to preparing students for what he calls a respectable middle-class profession. And joining us now is Vincent Rougeau, dean of Boston College Law School. And Dean Rougeau, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to meet you and great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
So how did we get here? You say legal education is in crisis. Why?
Well, I think because of some of the data you've indicated, but mainly because I think for a very long time, people could go to law school in a period of economic boom and find relatively easily good work shortly after graduating. And we have seen, particularly since the 2008 recession, a real change in what law students have to do to find good legal employment. It takes a lot more work on their part. Not everyone is finding what they hope to find, and some people have become very disappointed and upset with the fact that things haven't worked out the way they had hoped.
Is that, though, because of external factors in the economy? In other words, is it going to sort of come back again? You argue that it's also because of what is happening or not happening in law schools themselves, right?
Right. I mean, the economics part of the story is that the way the economy functions, the way businesses use legal services, the way law firms function, all of that has changed. It used to be that law firms depended heavily on human talent to get the job done. You could hire a lot of people at very high salaries to do work that now can be done through computers, can be outsourced, or can be done more efficiently in other ways. So that's cut down on the number of young people being hired to work in that particular setting. But also the economy itself changes the demand for lawyers in other sectors. Public sector decreases in spending mean that fewer lawyers are being hired to do a lot of public service work, to work in government and other places. So a lot of those structural changes are going on. The legal education side is one that suggests that the model we've used in law schools, which really trained people to be very rigorous thinkers who were solving problems in a setting that allowed them to do it, over a long period of time with a lot of other people, that's no longer profitable. That's no longer works for a lot of organizations that use lawyers. And so we need to be able to train young people when they leave law school to have the skills that are actually being sought after in the marketplace.
One of the things that you write about that I find really intriguing is this notion of returning the idea of law as a respectable middle-class profession. And you write about it as something that should be in service to the common good. And is that what is at risk here, a profession that is no longer in service to the common good?
I think a lot of what has happened over the last 20, 25 years is that increasingly law has been seen as a business.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with people practicing law and reaping the benefits that treating it to some degree as a business can provide. But that's not the way we've understood professions. You know, professions are about something larger than simply a ticket to work. You're participating in a community of learning and understanding that offers some broader service to the society. And that's the role, or that's what I mean when I'm thinking of the common good. Lawyers in a democracy serve a critical role. Many, many people cannot have access to their basic rights unless they have access to lawyers. So people who choose to enter the legal profession have to have a larger view of the role that they play than simply, this is a great way for me to get a good job, or this is a great way for me to make a lot of money.
So let's talk about what exactly is needed here. You actually say in the piece in The Atlantic that schools should weed out prospective law students who are in it only for the money. How would they do that? I mean, it seems like this is such a part of the American ethos. I mean, of course, we can serve, we can contribute to the common good, but lots of people make decisions that one of the reasons I want to work in such and such a profession is because I can make a terrific living at it.
Right. And at an entrance, to be honest, there's really no way. I mean, this is easier said than done. There's no way to say when I bring a student into law school, oh, you're here for the wrong reasons. And that's not really what I mean. Mm. I mean, we need to structure the educational experience to send a very clear message to the students that this is not about, a ticket to wealth. This is about the kinds of values that I was articulating earlier. Are you really interested in becoming a member of a profession that has an important service component, that has an important social justice component, that has an important sense of itself as serving not only the individuals who are part of it, but, you know, serving larger purposes within the society? And, you know, if people find that uninteresting, boring, not something they want to be a part of, and they keep hearing that message, maybe they will say, well, this isn't for me. What I really want to do is go to business school and make a whole lot of money. My hope is, and my sense is, a lot of people will still want to be lawyers, and actually a lot of people will be inspired to go to law school if they're receiving a message about the profession as a profession and recognize that there are many different routes to work in this profession that will allow them to do a number of different things. And it's not just about a vision of working in a big law firm and making a lot of money or making a lot of money, period.
So law schools have to do a better job educating students about the realities of what's out there of law school before they apply. How do they do that? I mean, how do they do that with students before they actually apply?
Well, before they apply, I think, you know, it's a mixture of what the law schools say, what the media say, what the culture is saying. You know, when I was in law school, we were all sort of glued to this television program, L.A. Law, which gave us this whole vision of the law lawyer as a, you know, high-flying, interesting person, you know, who was making a lot of money, but also doing a lot of good. We need to really unpack some of our assumptions about who lawyers are and what they do. And maybe the law schools need to showcase a lot more of the types of things that lawyers do in terms of public service, government work, public interest work, demonstrating that a career in the law has a lot of rewards that aren't monetary. I mean, that there are rewards about being able to spend your career engaged in work that has real meaning, and that there's a real benefit to educating yourself for that kind of life. It is difficult, I think, at the point of admission, as I said before, to say, you know, this is why you should become a lawyer, because not everyone who goes to law school is going to become a lawyer. I mean, there are people who choose to do it for other reasons. But I do think by communicating with pre-law advisors, by communicating with young people more generally, when we talk about what the law, what law school is about and what the legal profession's about, we can try to send a much richer message about what it means to be a lawyer so that people realize that, you know, there are a number of different things they may end up doing, and not all of them are going to make them a lot of money.
We're talking to Vincent Rougeau. He's the dean of Boston College Law School. We're talking to him about why legal education in America is broken and how to fix it. You can give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Do you think law schools need to change the way they operate? Are you a newly minted JD? And if so, did your law education land you a job? How would you improve or change American legal education? We'd love to hear from you. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Vincent Rougeau, you've got some other ideas as well. You talk about the need for, what I find this really intriguing, for law schools to create more partnerships with employers to help transition recent graduates into practice, sort of like an apprenticeship, right?
Yes.
So how would that work and what would that do?
Well, there are a lot of different ways to think about it, but I guess the basic idea is law schools need to work more closely with the profession to think about how we can create a partnership between the educational experience and the transition or the entrance into the profession. What you see in a lot of other countries, for instance, is there's always a mandatory period between your educational experience and your actual ability to work as a lawyer of, you can call it an apprenticeship. In Canada, they call it articling. In England, if you want to be a barrister, you have to be a pupil first. Mm. But what all of these things are about are a period of time where the young or the recent graduate is spending time with a seasoned professional, learning a little bit more about what it means to practice and in a particular kind of setting. So there's a parallel, I think, in this country to the way doctors are trained. And, you know, for law schools in the United States, I think one of the things we need to spend more time thinking about is how do we work with the profession to be serious about making sure our students, when they go out there, are ready to do the kind of work they're going to be asked to do.
And I guess among other things, too, right, this is an opportunity to bring the cost of law school down. In other words, if they're, say, they're doing this apprenticeship in their third year, accepting a modest salary, that would be money in their pocket versus more money, going more deeply into debt, for example, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think what we want to see more of is some flexibility for different kinds of law schools to structure different models that might allow them to offer, you know, different ways for students to do this in a way that, yeah, allows them to enter the profession without this huge burden of debt. I mean, we can't go on a system where the law schools have to spend more and more money subsidizing tuitions, which requires us to raise money privately or requires students who can pay to subsidize those who can't. I mean, to some degree, that's certainly okay. But there becomes a point where that kind of model is no longer sustainable. So how can we think creatively of other ways to allow people to have access to law school? Because another important question here is access. If the only people who get to go to law school are the people who can afford high tuitions or who can take on a lot of debt, we're going to certainly slowly prevent lots of people from lower incomes and diverse backgrounds. We're going to prevent them from coming to law school.
Well, let's talk about this debt issue. I mean, it's typical that someone coming out of law school will have as much as $120,000, $150,000 in debt. We mentioned that statistic from the ABA, 55% of people who graduated last year are in jobs that require passing a bar. In other words, they have this hugely expensive legal education, which isn't even necessary for the job that they ended up in. You raise the very provocative question, is it even worth it for many people to go to law school?
Well, I come back to the idea that you have to understand what you're taking on.
Right.
And if you're talking about $140,000 in debt to begin a profession that's going to carry you through a 40-year working career, maybe that's not so ridiculous. And you need to think carefully about what it is that you're trying to accomplish. Now, you could say, well, I'm taking on this debt, and if my only possibility for work is at a relatively low salary, does it make sense for me to do that? Now, it is not the case that you have to become heavily indebted to become trained as a lawyer. I mean, there are different environments in which you can take your education at different cost levels. So, but a student has to be somewhat savvy as to what he or she wants to do before taking on loans that might limit his or her choice. Now, I think the other point that you raise that's important here is it's not necessarily the case that that the debt. I'm sorry, I lost the point. But anyway, I mean, the point I was trying to make was really about that. I mean, that involves a lot of choice, and
sure,
you might want to raise what the question you dropped before. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I think you wrapped that up really well. And let me bring another voice into this conversation, because all this is related to the focus of my next guest. In recent months, some 16. Law schools have been sued by former students who claim the schools misled them by making false claims about their rates of job placements after graduation. Kyle McEntee went to Vanderbilt Law School in 2008. He graduated in 2008. He planned to go to work as a corporate lawyer. Instead, he founded something called Law School Transparency, which aims to make law schools more accountable about the claims they make. And Kyle joins us from Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta. And Kyle, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
It's great to be on.
So let me sort of get you to respond a little bit to what you've heard from Dean Rougeau, but tell me a little bit about your concern about law school education, which led to law school transparency.
Certainly. So law school transparency was founded to try and help prospective students better understand the cost of attending law school and the outcomes that they can expect. And what we found was that schools were not being as forthright as they should have been in the way they were advertising their programs. And for a profession that should be founded on being responsible and essentially professional responsibility, this was not a good way to introduce new people into the profession. And as Dean Rougeau points out, if we want people who are entering this profession with public service in mind, this is the wrong way to approach it. And so what we wanted to do was increase the accountability of law schools for the way they were advertising their statistics. For example, if they said 95% were employed, to actually explain what that number meant, that it included short-term, non-permanent jobs or part-time jobs or non-legal jobs. And that way, this way, people could better understand the investment that they were making.
Dean Rougeau, does that sound like an important part of, I mean, I know it's only a part, but an important part of the way things need to change in terms of the way law schools need to operate?
Yeah, I think I agree that transparency is a good thing and that we should be providing reasonable, honest information about outcomes if we're providing information about outcomes. I think some of the confusion about that information has to do with things that are based on a lot of different issues. I mean, we have, for instance, the ranking system for law schools, which essentially started this whole practice of listing outcomes information. And so the law schools provided that information based on what U.S. News and World Report, which is our primary ranker of law schools, despite the fact that it's not a professional organization of any kind, wanted from us. So I think a lot of people started investing that information with more value than perhaps it deserved, and increasingly the law schools felt compelled to package information in the way that U.S. News and World Report wanted it. Now, that doesn't excuse any kind of misinformation that may have been out there intentionally, but I don't think a lot of law schools were out there intending to deceive students, but I do think that the system sort of took off in a way that certainly made it, in some cases, difficult for students to recognize that what the information they were getting wasn't necessarily what they were perceiving it to mean.
Kyle, I want to get some callers in, but first let me just come back to you, because this concern about being transparent about these statistics about job placement, as I mentioned, has led to actually some lawsuits over the last few years, where people have actually claimed that law schools intentionally misled them. What do you make of those suits, and can you tell me something about them? And because here's my question, I mean, is it really fair? I mean, is this expectation that you go to school and therefore you're owed a job? Is that really fair, rather than just being aware of economic forces out there that may be making things the way they are?
I don't think this is an issue of entitlement. I think this is an issue of expectations. So when a student has this expectation that lawyering is a ticket to financial security, and then have employment information that confirms those suspicions, you end up with people who feel misled. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it might be negligent on the school's part. In other cases, it might be intentional. But either way, the result is the same, and that's a group of very unhappy people with a lot of debt who sat out 3 years of adding to the economy to instead end up in lots of debt and in an unhappy circumstance. Right. And while my organization's not involved in these lawsuits, and so we don't really comment too much on them, the underlying idea that law schools have been not fulfilling the responsibilities they owe as educators and as lawyers is rooted in reality. And it's an unfortunate circumstance, and it's something that the ABA now takes very seriously. Law schools are starting to take it more seriously. And as a result, we're going to be able to have these dialogues, such as the one Dean Rougeau is leading, about what we can do to improve law school and to make it less about being a traditional investment and, again, being an investment in intellectual capital.
Well, let's take some calls. Listeners, you can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. Let's go to Carol, who's a lawyer calling from Newton. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Yes, my point is that the law school education itself is geared towards corporate law and dealing with wealth, and it makes it much harder to try to go into more public service types of jobs once you have your law degree just because of the type of education that you've received. There are a lot of courses in corporations, in different types of property, in estates and trusts and partnerships, and very few in dealing with landlord-tenant or dealing with even sometimes criminal law and how to practice, those kinds of things. So your education itself kind of pushes you to work in those areas that are the big law firm and very well-paid kinds of jobs. But the public service jobs are much tougher.
Carol, it's a great point. And let me put, just because our time is running down, I want to put that point to Vincent Rougeau. What do you say to Carol?
Well, I think a lot has changed over the years. I know 25, 30 years ago, that was a huge problem. What we've seen in the years that have followed is a lot more emphasis, I know at our school, on clinical education, on experiential learning designed specifically to address that problem. But it is the case that a traditional legal education was probably designed to serve the needs of those employers who tended to offer jobs to the students to some degree. I mean, I don't think it was a direct relationship. But you do need to look closely at the school that you want to attend to make sure that they are offering the kind of breadth that you want to, so that you have access to these kinds of public interest jobs.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Let's go to Francis, who's calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Francis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Northeastern Law School graduate from 1982, and Northeastern has always had a huge emphasis on public service law, and I believe it still does. But more importantly, I'm surprised that the Dean of Boston College hasn't mentioned this. It has had the model cooperative program. So to graduate from the law school, you have to do 4 3-month co-ops in law-related fields. And they can be nonprofits, they can be big law firms. I did 2 big law firms. I ended up opening my own practice. And people weren't just chasing the money, but also it was my first choice of law school because I believed back then it would make me a much better lawyer than just going to, you know, the classes and learning intellectually.
Frances, thanks so much for that call. She was talking about co-ops and kind of training to get her into public service law.
Northeastern deserves incredible credit for being an innovator in a very unique style of legal education. I didn't mean to disparage that model in any way by not mentioning it, but I think the way we had structured the conversation didn't give me a good way to do that. But now that it's been mentioned, I think what Northeastern has done is tremendous. I do think, though, one of the things we've seen with that model is it's a very difficult model to reproduce in other places. I mean, I think a lot of people have written and discussed the benefits of what Northeastern has done, but it's been also discussed widely in the legal academy that when it's been tried elsewhere, it hasn't always been as successful. So what Northeastern was able to do sort of organically in Boston isn't always that easy to transplant.
Vincent Rougeau, we literally have 10 seconds left. I want to just ask you, are you hopeful, optimistic about where we go from here?
I'm very optimistic because I still think the legal profession is a wonderful profession to join, and I still think that people who are excited about a career and a life in a meaningful profession should consider law school.
Well, Vincent Rougeau, Dean of Boston College Law School, thanks so much for coming in and bringing these important issues before us today. We appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
And many thanks to you, Kyle McEntee, graduate of Vanderbilt Law School and the founder of Law School Transparency. Thanks for your time today. We're very grateful.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, thanks for your calls. You can keep the conversation going. Let us know what you think at radioboston.org. Still ahead on our program, the rent is too damn high and other lessons that New York City can teach Boston about developing affordable housing. Also, our weekend picks. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.